everybody. I'm Kelly Ellers.
I'm Jeffrey London.
And this is Volume Up by the T's.
Hey there, beauty professionals. Are you ready to elevate your career, each other, and our industry? Today's episode is brought to you by the Professional Beauty Association, your go-to resource for all things beauty industry related. Whether you're a hairstylist, makeup artist, esthetician, or any other beauty professional, the Professional Beauty Association has your back. With PBA, you can stay ahead of the game with the latest techniques, products, and business strategies that will set you apart from the competition. Along with unparalleled industry insights and trends, PBA opens the opportunity to connect with like-minded pros, attend exclusive events, and build relationships that will elevate your career. PBA members enjoy exclusive perks and discounts on industry events, education programs, and top-notch products. It's like having a backstage pass to the best the beauty world offers. So whether you're a seasoned pro or you're just starting your journey in the beauty industry, head over to probeauty.org today. They're not just an association, they're your partner in success.
So we're here. It's award season.
How is it ever?
And are we through it or are we in the midst?
Nope. No, not until those damn Oscars. We're stuck in a good way. I've been having fun. It's been different this year. People are experimenting, don't you think?
Yeah, lots of different hairstyles for sure. So there's one particular gal that I like to follow, and it's Selena Gomez. And I like to check out her different hairstyles, the updo, the bob, which led me to an article from Selena's hairstylist talking about creating her Love On music video looks. Mm-hmm. And it's never really dawned on me that, you know, the stylist, I mean, this is my nativity, right? But you're on set for the day, maybe two. But for this particular video, she had 8 different hair looks. That's quite a lot to plan out, right?
Shout out to Marissa Marino for making this happen. And they're really beautiful and different, which is also exciting. So, I mean, to your comment, like she really changed it up. We've got things that obviously coincide with costuming and the vibe.
Right.
Just like really interesting styles. Were there any faves for you?
You know, I love that. I think she had on like a multicolored, like Oscar de la Renta sort of crocheted dress with like a big headband.
Mm-hmm. The headband.
And just kind of the straight look.
The headband look, it's so good. That mod style.
Yeah, I love it. And Marissa talks a little bit about too, like her ponytail, right? And how she would follow the lines of the cheekbone to continue to kind of pull the hair in the same direction to accentuate her features. And I also never thought about that. So you know what? There's a lot that goes into all these incredible music videos. And let's not forget about the stylist behind the scenes.
I got to watch the video now. I mean, that's really the big take. Do you follow her musical career? Because I really enjoy Selena Gomez, the actress / TV chef. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Particularly no, but I do like her fashion sense.
Yeah, and I like her hairstyle. So got to get into it. If you've seen the video, let us know what you think. And let's give a shout out to Marissa Marino again, because it looks great. So in some more serious news, we saw this happening in Georgia. Obviously, things sort of walked back. But Oklahoma seems to be determined to do some deregulation. So there's a story coming out of Tulsa in which Oklahoma lawmakers are trying to cut red tape. So there looks to be a new law that is hitting, I guess, the circuit in Tulsa, in which there is a bill, Senate Bill 1475, authored by Michael Bergstrom, cutting required hours for cosmetology school from 1,500 to just 500. As you can imagine, not going over well among the state's professionals, people saying that there's no way that I can impart all of the knowledge that is in the 32 chapters of my cosmetology book within that time. What are your thoughts here? I mean, we heard this for, you know, decades, really, that people have been interested in deregulating to reduce, quote unquote, red tape has been described. What's your thought here?
Yeah, my thought is that I hope that Mr. Bergstrom does not get said bill passed, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, 500 hours to cram all of those chapters in, as you mentioned, I think 1500 probably doesn't seem like a lot, considering most states aren't even required to teach around textured hair practices.
Absolutely.
Right. And so I think we can add to, and the number of times I've heard from stylists, like, really didn't learn that much in beauty school, right? I had to then relearn or reteach myself or become an apprentice or an assistant after beauty school. I think this is a terrible idea and am solidly against the deregulation.
Well put. Yeah, we're not into this at all. Oklahoma, get it together. Do what Georgia did. Make it right. Everything that you've said, this is just not something that we're excited about. And we're hoping that things are going to turn out a different way. So if you are in Oklahoma, maybe pressure your local lawmakers to think differently about this. And certainly we'll drop some links in the show notes. So if you want to get involved, that you can. Other ways that we're helping you out, our segment, Lend a Brush. We've got quite a few questions, but the one that we picked for this week's episode was also for our friend Tiana, whom we talked to a few weeks ago. She was one of the hairstylists that talked about working at New York Fashion Week as a lead. What's the business model for someone interested in only working editorial? Can you make out a career by only doing editorial work?
You can. Of course, you have to be consistent. You have to search for only those clients. And for me, because that's all I want to do is editorial, I can turn down certain jobs. I'm like, no, that's not really matching what I want to do, you know? Even though it may be a great opportunity, but I stick to that high fashion editorial. That's all I want to do.
You know, Jeff, I think that it would be really fun and exciting to do backstage New York Fashion Week. However, I've been there, lucky me, I know, and it is very chaotic. So I think it's a high pressure, high stress, very fast paced environment.
Yeah, she seems really well suited to this.
Right.
So if you're not into that lifestyle, maybe you wouldn't make a good living. But if you are, you know, all the power to you. All right, send us your burning questions for celebrity stylists, brand educators, ambassadors, or C-suite members, and we'll work to get those answered by someone who we can trust to lend you a brush. Send in your questions via email to volumeup@thetease.com.
This week, we're talking with Hunter Donia. Hunter is a digital educator teaching beauty professionals how to streamline, automate, and elevate their process in their business without being overwhelmed through ADHD-friendly business education. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review, and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at Read the Tees, and send in questions to volumeup@thetees.com.
Do it. Now let's talk beauty news. Our editorial team is deep diving to get you the inside scoop from trending celebrity looks to the newest products and the biggest events happening week to week. Let's talk hair, beauty, and culture. First up, the article, Margot Robbie and Brie Larson share a hair colorist, and he's spilling on how to get their blonde. A-listers Margot Robbie and Brie Larson have more in common than you may realize. To start, they're both incredibly successful actor-producers with dozens of blockbuster Hollywood projects between them. They also happen to share a hair colorist, Jacob Schwartz. While their specific blonde hues may differ, take for example their recent appearances at the 2024 SAG Awards, Schwartz uses Schwarzkopf Professional, Blonde Me Lightener, Developer, and Agora Vibrance color for both stars. Head to thetees.com for his exact formulation, directly from Schwartz. You can thank us later. My question, Kelly, do you share a colorist with any of your friends?
You know, I do. I think I know that I have referred many people to my stylist, my colorist, and it's because I think she's absolutely fantastic. So very much a word of mouth sort of deal, at least where I live.
Yeah, well, it turns out that these stars actually share a hairstylist as well, Bryce Scarlett. So they are really like double, triple dipping. Do you think that the pros share tips on those stars in terms of the color and styling choices? I mean, the blondes are different for sure, and they don't necessarily do a lot of the same hairstyles. But I'm wondering, do we share notes?
I think they do. I mean, knowing our industry, right? Everybody is so willing, helpful, and you know, non-competitive in some ways. And so I think they want the best for their celebs.
Yeah. Last question. With this story, the two gals on the red carpet, was there a blonde that you preferred? Could you imagine yourself as one of these two? Because one's a little bit warmer, one's a little cooler. Curious.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's Brie Larson. I think that's the one I would navigate to. I mean, no disrespect for Margot Robbie, of course.
Obviously.
I mean, she looks like a real life, well, I think that's the intent, a real life Barbie at every award show that she's been to this season. So both stunning, but I do see a variance in color, and I'm going to go for me, Brie Larson.
Brie for Kelly. I gotcha.
All right, next up, meet Booksy's 2024 Global Brand Ambassadors. Booksy is set to make an even bigger global impact with the help of a few notable names in our industry. The fast-growing booking platform for salon and beauty pros announced back in January that it had welcomed a roster of official brand ambassadors made up of prominent industry leaders, including A-Rod, Bird Mina, Joel Torres, and Yamina Maltaban. By serving as Booksy's global brand ambassadors, these talented pros' stories will be highlighted as a way to help shape, inspire, and accelerate the professional beauty and grooming communities. Backed by Booksy, this group of veterans aims to help others in the business achieve success, be it creatively or financially. For Booksy, its new global brand ambassador program personifies the brand's commitment to breaking barriers and connecting pros across industries, regions, languages, and cultures. Booksy's global brand ambassador program will allow the brand to arm more barbers and stylists and beauty pros with the knowledge and resources they need to thrive. Additionally, the program will encourage providers to focus on addressing and better understanding industry shifts such as sustainability, the importance of ultra personalization for customers, and the rise of AI and other technologies. Head to thetease.com to learn more about the four pros who have been named Booksy's global brand ambassadors. Jeff, so this is going to tie into my interview with Hunter. One of his main recommendations is you must be booking online. Perhaps it is with Booksy. I'm not sure what specific platform he's using, but to elevate the experience, to make it seamless and to really cut down on time. Mm-hmm. I love booking online. I love my text reminders. What about you, Jeff?
Oh my God.
What is your barbershop link?
I would never rely on some sort of paper record. Like at this point, everything's online. I want to talk to no one that I've already scheduled before I'm out the door.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely. Same page. Like whatever I can do to reduce the amount of talking I have to do about the next appointment, I'm all in on. So
why is it that we don't want to talk to anyone anymore? Like I don't want to call. I don't want to call. Nope.
Mm-mm. But it just, I mean, did we ever want to? That's kind of where I'm at.
That's fair. No, probably not.
We did it out of necessity. Like, oh, do you have an appointment for us? But no. So now we can avoid it. We can see when our people are booked and when they're not.
We can.
When they can squeeze us in for something where there's a weird cancellation. Or yeah. And I love a push notification. I love a reminder.
Same.
So, you know, tech isn't all bad. Thank you so much to our wonderful editors for this week's beauty news. And don't forget to check out more stories on thetease.com.
Next up, my interview with Hunter, where we talk about ADHD in the beauty industry. Hunter Donia is a digital educator teaching beauty professionals how to streamline, automate, and elevate their process in their business without being overwhelmed through ADHD-friendly business education. In 2020, he was recognized as the youngest up-and-coming hair colorist and presented at industry conferences across the nation. Hunter enjoys hanging out with his cat, Jenna, traveling, and attending music festivals and concerts in his free time. All right, Hunter, we're going to get into it. We've got a lot of ground to cover today. You are incredibly interesting, and congratulations on all of your success to date. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm so excited to be here. Let's get into it.
All right. So we're going to start with your background.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about the work that you do. If for some reason one of our listeners is not familiar with you, give us the rundown.
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me on here just to start with. I really appreciate it. And to you listening to this, nice to meet you. My name is Hunter Donia, and I create digital courses and online education for hairstylists to teach them how to systematize and automate their beauty businesses, which allows you as the beauty professional to regain work-life balance and also regain time and energy to focus on the things that actually matter and grow the business at the end of the day. And that's a little bit about what I do in the background in a very long story short, very long story short.
I love that. I mean, the key to scale is operationally, like having your system dialed in.
100%.
And, you know, if you are a business owner out there, it's a challenge to operationalize and have standard operating procedures to allow you to scale. So the work that you're doing is so important for our industry.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that the majority of the time, people get into entrepreneurship and the main focus is the money, right? And the money, of course, is so important, but we forget that time is also an extremely important resource, right?
Yeah.
To be able to make more money at the end of the day, and also to reap the benefits of the hard work that you put in up until this point, you know, because if you're just working your butt off and you could be making a ton of money, but if you don't have any time or energy left, then what's the point of all the hard work and all the money in the first place? Right. So I love that you emphasize the importance of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if definitely in the businesses that I've started and grown, that scale is key. Yep. So when did you start your education for stylists and entrepreneurs across, you know, your social channels, your .com, certainly your podcast that we'll get into. But how did this all start for you?
Yeah, so I started in brand education about 6 years ago, actually teaching color.
Okay.
And I found that, and I loved it. I loved it so much. I got into education because I just loved being able to give the gift to other hairstylists that I had received from other educators in the past. Like the amount of inspiration and transformation and growth that came from me experiencing that, like to be able to be trained and have the privilege to be able to further move that on and pass it on was so amazing to me. So I got into it doing that and I loved it, but I found in my classes, you know, particularly, you know, teaching on behalf of a retail brand, right?
Sure.
You know, we're incentivized to teach them how to sell more retail. And of course, when we're talking about color, we can't not talk about the consultation, right? And I just lit up every single time I got to talk about anything business-wise. Like,
yeah.
And that was like what I loved really actually to talk about. And it's what I found the stylists had the most questions about, you know, like we'd be in a blonding class and all I'd be getting is questions that are really surrounds like the client connection and the communication and what it looks like for post-care and when they come back and like all of those businessy type of things. And I just freaking loved it. I ended up opening up my own salon suite somewhere down the line and I blew it up. I absolutely exploded that business and it worked out really well for me. And I just started to share what I had going on with other hairstylists. And I, at the time, I actually didn't realize like that what I was doing was like different or cool.
Interesting.
And everybody was like asking me questions and thought it was really awesome. And so then I created a course because I was like, the best way to teach what I'm doing is with a course. I teach a lot of tech. I teach a lot of step-by-step tech tutorials.
Okay.
I teach a lot about how to implement those processes. And so it takes like watching a step-by-step video to like kind of get those things into place. And so that's why it's the best medium for me to be able to do so. And it absolutely took off. We've had the course for about 3 years now. And we've had just under 1,000 students go through it.
Wow.
Yeah, we have a podcast, we have a membership, we've done in-person classes now. We have a huge summit that we do every year that we raise 100% of proceeds to go towards BIPOC Beauty School Scholarship.
Cool.
We've raised $55,000.
Wow.
It's truly been an insane journey up until this point. And I'm just so excited to see what the future brings. It's really awesome.
That's amazing. Let's talk a little bit about your podcast, the Modern Hairstylist Podcast. When did you start that? And, you know, podcasting is a labor of love, right? It is.
Yes.
It is multifaceted. I mean, you pop on for like a 45 minute conversation to listen to your favorite podcasters, but there's a lot that goes on in the background.
Yeah.
Why did you start it? Talk to me about your guests, the topics that you cover.
Yeah. So I don't know, Kelly, did you ever, do you know what Clubhouse is?
Oh, yes. You know, and I called that out the gate.
Period.
I was like, you know, bop, bop, here it goes.
So that's really where I got my start with the education I'm doing now.
Cool. Okay.
I went really hard on Clubhouse. I was showing up there like nonstop every single day because I was so obsessed with having these intelligent, beautiful conversations with my peers. Like it was so exciting for me. And once Clubhouse kind of took a dip, because it definitely did, like it's not really really relevant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Once Clubhouse took a dip, I really missed being able to have those same types of conversations, having that same type of community and using my voice, you know.
Yeah.
I love using my voice to be able to express like the things that I have going on, the teachings that I have, et cetera, et cetera. And so the podcast was the next best thing, really. The only thing that I really wish that it had was still some sort of conversational aspect to it.
Sure.
Like I wish it wasn't just me speaking at, right? I wish that there was some response, but I try my best to make it so there's response in the DMs. And then of course, like Spotify sometimes has like little comment Q&A replies on the episode. So I try to make it as a community-based as possible, but truly it was just, I was looking for another medium to be able to express my ideas that people wanted and express the proven processes and systems that I put into place that have helped so many and hopefully, and also create a platform that's accessible as well. Like listening to a podcast is so accessible, right?
Yes.
For the majority of people. And it's just something that is really quick and easy. You can listen to it on the commute there. It doesn't take much time, right? Out of your day. And it's been a really cool situation. It's definitely a long game, you know.
Yes.
At the beginning, it was a lot of testing, troubleshooting, figuring things out. I still, to this day, you can never predict like which episodes will like land really well and like which ones won't. So it's a fascinating journey up until this point.
Yeah.
So yeah.
You know, I've listened to your podcast and I'm going to dive into one of the topics that you touch on, and that's your journey with ADHD and how you believe it brought you to beauty. Share with us that journey and a little bit of insight there.
Yeah. So I have the privilege of been diagnosed with ADHD from a very young age, like second grade, which a lot of people unfortunately do not have the privilege of getting a diagnosis at that age.
Sure.
But I've had the privilege of being aware of it for so long. And middle school, like late middle school, I started to I was not doing well with my academics.
Okay.
And I was also just came out of the closet. So I was very fresh and new and being open with my sexuality, even understanding my sexuality in like seventh grade, right? And you know, I didn't fit in a lot of places because of that. The fact that, you know, academics was so difficult for me to be consistent with and fully like focus on, right? Because of my ADHD, it was a really difficult space for me.
Yeah.
But as I was exploring my identity, I started to color my hair and I started to wear makeup and do my nails and all that good stuff, right? All the beauty stuff.
Yeah.
And I just became really passionate about it. And I thought it was really beautiful that I was able to express myself on the inside, on the outside, how I wanted to in the moment. And I had learned that my high school had a high school cosmetology vocational program.
Oh, wow.
And I was able to sign up for that starting my sophomore year. And it completely changed my life. Like, I remember the first day I walked into that classroom and I was just surrounded by peers who were so like-minded, who had like a similar mission of like making other people feel beautiful. And I was just so fascinated in it. And it was so crazy. The thing about ADHD is you hyper-focus on the things that bring you a lot of joy and you're really passionate about, like to an addictive degree.
Okay.
But then you like completely, you know, throw everything else to the wayside.
Yeah.
So I got really obsessed with cosmetology. I absolutely aced every single test. I was the annoying kid asking every question when everybody was like, Hunter, can you just shut up? Like, we want to get to the end of the day. I just became obsessed with it. And what I found to be even more advantageous about it when it came to my ADHD was I actually started in a salon, working in a salon. My very first job was working in a salon when I was 16 as a general assistant. So once I started cosmetology school, I like just got into a salon really quickly.
Okay.
And it was so excellent for my ADHD because, number one, I was passionate about it. But number two, I had no option but to be focused on what I had going on, right? Like, the cool thing about ADHD and hairdressing is that there is another human holding you accountable. Like, there is an appointment, there's a person in your chair.
Yes.
You have to bring the person from A to B no matter what, you know? It just is what it is, and there's no excuse. And it's been interesting, you know, I work from home now, and I have a team who I'm accountable to. I have students who I'm accountable to.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, it's really just me. And I could slack off if I wanted to. So I've had to put in systems in place and learn how to like adjust to that. But hairdressing is so amazing. And I think it attracts people with ADHD so much because of those two aspects. Like, number one, it's just so fascinating, so creative, so invigorating. And then number two, it's actually something that I can thrive at because there's a lot of accountability there, you know, and it forces you to focus and there's no option otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, what a beautiful story. I got a little teary eyed, a little goosebumps. I mean, how amazing that your high school had that vocational program.
I know.
And like this life changing moment, because, you know, all of the things that you were going through and experiencing in middle school on top of just middle school, right?
Yeah.
No one ever says like, I really crushed it in middle school, right? Like,
yes.
And then to just be able to fully immerse yourself in something that was so driven for you. I mean, it's really incredible. So that's a beautiful story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me share. And I agree. I get teary-eyed too talking about it now that you just said that.
I mean, it's,
I agree. It was a huge privilege to be able to have that vocational program.
Yeah.
I truly wish that, number one, I wish that vocational school wasn't as stigmatized as it is to this day. Because to be able to set up these kids with a career ahead of time,
right?
Even if it's like somebody goes and tries it out from that young age and decides maybe like, hey, actually, this isn't for me. And being able to figure that out at that young age is so powerful.
Right.
But I was able to get my cosmetology license before I even graduated high school.
That is crazy.
Yeah, for free.
That is unreal.
For real. So again, I recognize that that was a massive privilege, and I'm so grateful to have had that experience. I somehow, some way convinced my parents to let me go. I'm thank God that they put me there, because it's just set me up for so much success.
Right.
But I wish that every freaking high school and everywhere, you know, had that opportunity for these kids. It truly was a blessing, for sure.
And that is, you know, something we're passionate about at the T's, is really making sure that everyone knows that this profession is a viable, success-driven profession, right? My mom was a stylist and salon owner for 40 years. So
cool.
I literally grew up in the back of her salon, folding towels, doing the whole thing. And so I knew that it was an incredible, beautiful profession, right?
Yeah.
But I think that stigma generally of like, oh, you know, you're going to go to beauty school or this or that, when really you can make an incredible living.
Yes.
And do something you're incredibly passionate about. And so we hope everyone from your grandfather to your guidance counselor understands that this profession is viable.
100%. Yeah. I remember introducing the idea of me going to the vocational program to my mom, and my mom, and she's my biggest supporter to this day.
Awesome.
She totally would regret. She probably regrets saying this, you know, she, but at the time she was like, well, then if you're not going to college, or, and if you're going to go down this route, then you have to move out when you're 18. You know, I remember being in the car with my dad, and we were like driving past the house, and I was like, I want to buy a house like that one day.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't think you're going to be able to afford that house, you know, and oof, now they're eating their words.
But, sorry, mom and dad.
And it's, you know, and that's it's tough, right? Being a parent is really hard, because you want to look out for your kid as much as possible.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that they're set up for the most success possible. And because of the stigma and because of the misunderstanding, right?
Right.
And also the lack, sometimes, you know, the lack of education that is available to us, particularly on the business side within the industry, it causes all of that type of worry and stigma to be amplified.
For sure.
Which is a shame. But you and I are trying to change that one step at a time.
Yeah, we are.
Right. Which is why I'm so honored to be having this conversation with you.
Thank you. Moving into advocacy and care, balancing a career in the beauty industry is demanding. How do you prioritize self-care? What steps do you recommend to prevent burnout?
So a lot, this is actually really, truly the core of what I, of all of what I teach.
Okay.
And we can go into so many different places. The first thing I'm going to say is there's never going to be a perfect moment in time in your career or your life where everything is amazing and fantastic and you never have to worry about something ever again, or that you're not going to get burnt out,
right,
or that you aren't going to have to do something. There's always going to be shit that you don't want to do, you know, no matter what. You can scale your business so much, right, to a point where it's absolutely hands off and autopilot, but there will always be something to stress out about. There will always be something to worry about. There's always going to be a hustle in one way or another. That is what it is. However, the standard of what it means to earn a really, really, really good living, like an exceptional living as a hairstylist, like one that's above average, that standard has raised so much for us over the past couple of years. Growing a clientele, maintaining that clientele, the business side of everything, it has changed very greatly, even in just the past 5 years, right?
Yeah.
We're no longer just hairstylists. We're social media. You know, we've seen the memes of this, right? We're hairstylists, we're influencers, we're social media managers. We need to know how to do email marketing now. Like, there's so many things, right?
Yeah, fair.
And with that, I think it's so important as our titles evolve and our responsibilities rise, that we are adapting with the way that we're approaching all of those things as much as possible, to streamline it, to make it as easy as possible. And I truly believe that having those systems in place that creates the ease of those things, right, is important. And then not just systems that make those things easier and keep them consistent for you and make them as hands-off as possible, but systems that also hold you accountable to the boundaries that you would like to have in place within your business.
Okay.
So for example, like, I'm a really big advocate of online booking, and probably in more advanced, intense ways than the majority of the industry really talks about. Like, I'll talk about online booking, and people are like, yeah, like, I have online booking in my business. Like, I use it every now and then. Like, my clients are into it sometimes, yada, yada. But when I talk about like using online booking as like a system that holds you accountable to your boundaries, I'm saying like, you only book appointments online, like, period.
Okay.
The only way that somebody can get an appointment with you is by booking online. And the reason why is because I know that I've been in a circumstance where like, I have Anne right in front of me, right? I have Anne, who's like my favorite client. I freaking love doing her. And we get to the end of her appointment, and I'm sitting down with her face to face, and she's like, okay, I want to come back in 4 weeks. And I'm like, I don't have any availability for her in 4 weeks, right? At the time that she wants. Mm-hmm. So what I end up doing when I'm in that pressure moment, eye to eye, I love Anne so much. And I'm like, and we love taking care of other people because we're hairdressers, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to squeeze myself in, right? I'm going to early, stay late on my days off. Actually, literally with my client, Anne, her name is actually Anne. The reason why I use her as an example is because this happened to me. I did that thing. I ended up squeezing her into the end of my Friday, which ended up being a 12-hour day.
Okay.
She was my last appointment. I had already worked a crazy week and she was my last appointment. And I ended up turning her hair purple instead of blonde by accident because I was so exhausted, wasn't paying attention to detail. And it really, truly was like a turnaround moment for me. It really was the spark for like why I've learned and teach everything that I do now.
Yeah.
Was that I need to put up some bumper rails to make it so it's not even a possibility for me to squeeze myself into here or there. Like there needs to be something, and this goes back to what I've learned with ADHD. There needs to be something that's holding me accountable to those boundaries.
Yeah.
And having a system that's able to do that for you, that you still have control of to a certain degree, I think is really helpful and takes the pressure off and allows you to implement those boundaries in a professional way and simultaneously still take care of your clients and still offer a great client experience.
Yeah, I think that's so important because I'm guilty of it too. Like, maybe what about Thursday? Can you come in early on Thursday?
Right.
that's so interesting and such a good tip to just fully book online and set up those guardrails.
Yeah. And we could talk all about online booking and like a lot of people just don't think it would work well for them or whatever. And there's so many things that can go about with that. But even if you're listening to this and you're like, well, what about like in the salon, right? Like you could have an iPad and you could have somebody book online with you in person, right? It doesn't have to be like after they leave as well.
Yeah.
If you want to get them to pre-book too. So there's options.
I love the online booking too, because I like the text reminders. I like the calendar invite as a consumer, right?
Yes.
So it keeps me on track too.
Yeah. And consumer behavior, very much so. I try to stay on top of my research for like what, like, you know, Forbes is publishing and what people are seeing with surveys and data as far as consumer behavior goes. And it is increasingly becoming clear that the majority of consumers, your clients, are looking for self-service options as much as possible.
Yeah.
And having that self-service option is preferred by the majority. I did my own survey actually over the summer across 500 women in the United States, specifically 500 women in the United States who visit salons. So these aren't just like your people who are doing box color at home, right? These are your clients, right?
Yeah.
And 71% of them said that if their stylist had online booking, right, then they would absolutely prefer to just book online moving forward.
Yeah.
So the majority of people want it. And there's great benefits for you to use it as well for your own life, for your own work-life balance, right? And there's also ways to implement it in which you can be truly, fully confident that your client will book the right thing. Because I promise you, I have not had one person come into my program where we really teach them how to make this work for them who has had a situation where it was like, oh no, like I could never have my clients book their own appointment. There's definitely things that you can put in place to make it so you can trust people to book online by themselves and get it done right.
Yeah, sounds like you've got all the answers. All right, so building a support system we know is critical in the industry too. Can you share the role of a support system, how people have supported you in your professional journey and how they've contributed to your success as well?
Yeah. Community over competition is super important, right? I think it's something that people say a lot. Like it's like a nice buzz statement.
Yeah.
Like community over competition. But I think back to like my Clubhouse days when I started to blow up within that little space and I was getting connected with all these different educators and all these different people. And some of them weren't as supportive or great as others, you know, but a lot of them showed me so much love, so much support, and still show me so much love and support to this day. And we will platform each other. We will take care of each other. And that was built on like genuine, real relationships with no intention of expecting anything from the relationship.
Right.
Right. Like there was no expectations around it. It was truly just like we were coming together. We had a similar interest of like changing this industry and like helping other people and like finding other people with that same strong of a why. And now that we've started that relationship in such a beautiful way, we support each other and we move the movement forward together.
Yeah.
And I have those people that I can lean on all the time. I have those people that I can ask for advice, and I have those people who can support me when I need it. And I just think that is so beautiful. And so I think looking at your peers, instead of as even in your local area, right? Like even the salon down the road,
yeah.
Looking at them as a peer, looking at them not as competition, as something that as a relationship that can actually be really beautiful and symbiotic, I think it's important, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Another topic on your podcast is, you talked about changing the perception that you put yourself kind of in this area where you're not successful or good at what you do. How has that helped you achieve your full potential and seen your superpowers, to kind of introspectively look at that?
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about like self-doubt.
Yeah.
I think social media, we all know it's done so many great things, and it's done really, really poor things.
Yeah.
To our mental health and our businesses and our lives, et cetera, right? Like truly is like a pros and cons situation. And I think with social media, it's so easy to compare yourself to everybody else out there now, you know?
Yeah.
And it's especially harmful because you're seeing everybody's highlight reels, right?
Yeah.
You're not seeing the actual behind the scenes, what the work is that somebody has put in to get there, what the work that they put in is now to this day and moving forward, all of the woes, all of the downsides, all of the things behind that, right? Also, I think education is another thing that has become extremely accessible, extremely prevalent. It's just growing and growing and growing. The amount of like new education out there, specifically independent education and educators out there, is wildly growing. And I think with that, you have a ton of different perspectives that are coming into play. You know, we all have our own experiences. We all have our own belief systems. And sometimes I think education can come from an approach of being extremely linear and not super individualized, or very much like a one size fits all situation, and not taking into consideration very important nuances. So, for example, something I talked about on my podcast episode where I talk about this, I think it's called redefining your definition of success.
Okay.
I had a student of mine come into one of our groups and ask a question, and it was talking about how she had just looked at her profit and loss statement for the year or something like that. And she said that her profit margin was like low. It was like quote unquote low, right? I forget what the percentage was. I think it was like 5% or something like that. Her profit margin for her business was 5%. And she was like, and I was asking her, I was like, what makes that inherently bad? Like what makes 5% like a bad number? Like why are we assigning that feeling or that definition to that number? Right.
Right.
And she was like, oh, well, like I heard this educator that I respect say that like, if your profit margin is less than 25% or something like that, 15% or something like that, then your business is failing and you're a failure and like whatever it may be. And it was interesting because as we continuously asked questions, we pulled so much nuance out of that 5%, right? She had invested so much in her business that year. She had hired her first employee that year, right?
Oh, right.
And then she's an S corp, right? So the way that you look at your profit versus like that's after her paying herself her reasonable compensation with her S corp, right? So it's like, we see a lot of these blanket statements and we're comparing ourselves to these benchmarks that are out there from somebody totally different from you,
right?
Who has a totally different view on their own business, their own life with their own circumstances. And it can be really harmful because at the end of the day, like what's your definition of success? What's your definition of happy, right?
Right.
And how can you enjoy the journey? Maybe you're not there yet. Maybe you haven't hit your goals yet, but how can you enjoy the journey along the way? And what lessons are you learning along the way? And how can you self-reflect along the way? And just stay in your own lane and put those blinders up, because it's so important to understand that like you're exactly where you are. You're supposed to be right now, and whatever somebody else is doing and wherever they are, and even what they've done to get there is none of your business. Truly, your business is your business, and that's the one you should be focused on.
I love that. Ooh, that's solid. I love that you pulled the nuances out, because you're like blanket statement, 5%, yikes, failing, right? No. What did you do? Let's break this down.
Right.
And then really tackle it. And it sounds like she actually was running a very great business, right?
Yeah, she's happy. I mean, that's all that my own business, right? My own business. We did 50% profit the last year. I'll be very open about this. I did 50% profit last year.
Amazing.
This year we did 25%. at the end, we're recording this, like, we just ended 2023, we did 25%.
Yep.
So I could look at that as like, holy shit, like we did not do as much profit as we did before. Like, what the hell is wrong? Like, that's really scary. Things are going down.
Yeah.
But then you look at the nuance of it all. And I'm like, I hired like two people, right?
Right.
And that's also like, those are investments for the long term, right?
Sure.
Like, I shouldn't expect to see the money that I'm spending immediately to give me that return immediately, right? That, I mean, those are sometimes things that take a long time for you to see a return on.
Yep.
And if you look at any like massive, huge corporation, right? Like really, really big conglomerates. I'm talking like Walmart, grocery store chains, and like Apple, whatever it may be. You see, they all have roller coasters of years, yeah. You know, sometimes they're doing really bad, sometimes they're doing really good. But again, it's like, what's the definition of bad and good? You know, it's so again, the nuance is so important.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, we're going to hard pivot to another topic. You made a post a few weeks ago talking about this, and we understand the hype around Taylor Swift, right? We're all there. We got it. She's a billionaire who is constantly selling out shows with a loyal fan base. We know the gig. We're jamming to her music. If you think about the things that she's done to create this pandemonium that stylists and salon owners can use for their business. First off, what made you start thinking about what Taylor does and how you can replicate that in your own business? Because I love this. We're going to dive in.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't call myself a Swiftie, but like I am a Taylor Swift fan and I really love her music. I really love her music. And I personally went to the Eras Tour this past year.
Okay.
And it was so the entire, I like that you use the word pandemonium. The entire pandemonium around the Eras Tour was so fascinating to me. It was so interesting. I was really excited to go to that tour. Like when I knew that she was going to announce that tour and I was like, yeah, I have to go. And I kind of had like a little bit of a budget in mind. Like I was like, yeah, like I'll pay like $250 or $300 on that ticket, right?
Yeah.
And then we saw what happened. Like it sold out like crazy. And there was tickets selling on StubHub for like $10,000. Like, and the amount of attention and media was absolutely wild. And it made me personally willing. I was now willing to spend $600 to go and see Taylor Swift. So that's what I did. And that was a deal, dude. Like that was like, I was lucky that I spent that money on the seat that I got, truly. There's tons of other people. So I got that $600 ticket literally like the day before I went to that concert, I think.
Oh, wow.
In that row, there were other seats that were empty with seats that weren't purchased. That were still on StubHub for like $1,000+. There were people who were outside of the stadium, like watching, listening to the concert from outside of the stadium. We saw that a lot of people were doing that.
Yeah.
Who purchased tickets, spent $1,000+ on those tickets 2 hours into the concert when there was 1 hour left.
No.
They came in. Like, I was like, oh, like, where have you been this entire time? They were like, I just went on StubHub and I paid $1,000 to be in here. I've been outside for 2 hours. I said,
whoa.
That is crazy.
Whoa.
Wild.
Whoa.
That's why I thought it was super fascinating.
Yeah, for sure.
And I thought about how like the psychology of it all and like why we were willing to spend that much money on it. Like what made the value of this ticket so high in our perception?
Yeah.
And I think the demand on the tickets, of course, was wildly a huge part of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, like I was totally down like before, like I was a Swiftie, I wouldn't call myself a crazy Swiftie, but I was a Taylor Swift fan. I like was like, yeah, I'll spend like $300 on this ticket. But then because of the demand, because of this like phenomena that was happening, like the biggest tours as far as media goes, right? Ever really. The way that this has like shifted like local economies, like I wanted to be a part of that. Like I wanted to experience that.
Right.
And I think that how that relates to our businesses behind the chair is that if you do a really good job at building a demand for yourself around something that you're really passionate about, around a problem that you're really good at solving and you have great solutions for, and you create a really beautiful reputation within your area and you're just doing cool stuff, you can charge whatever you want to charge. Truly, like you can truly break the glass ceiling of what you thought was possible. Even if you're in a small town, especially if you're in a small town, actually, because you've created that much demand that there's so many people that actually want to be a part of it. and then their perceived value of what they're willing to pay for that experience, to be a part of that experience, goes to be so much higher. And so I just thought it was super fascinating.
Yeah.
And I used it as an example for that episode that I did about, you know, is there really like a glass ceiling? And I truly don't think there is a glass ceiling for us as hairstylists, particularly like, I mean, you know, we could say like, oh, well, that's a concert. That's Taylor Swift. And I'm like, okay, well, that's entertainment. Like that's a mega luxury, right? And we could argue that hair is a luxury, but it's not, it doesn't have to be a luxury in a lot of people's eyes, you know?
Yeah.
I think that we have an even better case than Taylor Swift does for why we shouldn't be able to charge a shit ton of money for the services that we're offering.
Yeah, I love that. What are some tips that, you know, stylists can take from this conversation about creating something special? Or are there any types of services that they can recommend to kind of level up their game and create that demand?
Yeah, so whenever I talk about this, I get nervous that there's people in the room who have already heard this before, but it's important to always go back to this fundamental.
Truly,
and this is proven, it's been proven time and time again for decades at this point, like niching down and becoming the go-to person for one thing. Like becoming the expert, becoming the master of one thing, and understanding how to market that one thing can absolutely explode your business, truly, and understanding how to bridge a potential client's pain points around that topic with your solutions, that type of skill and doing the work to understand that, right?
Yeah.
And taking the education to learn that I've just seen it happen so many times. It happened with my own business. This is how I became 3.5 months book solid with 5 new client requests a week.
Wow.
Truly, like, figuring out how to niche down and becoming the expert in one thing and focusing on one thing and solving a problem. Even better if you can solve a problem that's not being solved by many people. That's how you do it. That's how you blow up your business, period.
I think that's so smart. I mean, for example, my stylist, I sought her out because she's the best in extensions where I'm at.
Yep.
And I will never leave, right? Yep. Because the expertise, and she's also booked far out, training other people. Like it's a whole kind of domino effect, right? That niching down.
Totally. And because you trust those expertise so much, and because that person has really established themselves as the expert, you're also going to be willing to pay more for it too. So,
right. 100%.
Not just do you not have a wandering eye with other places, but also you are totally willing to pay the high dollar. I mean,
yep.
There could be somebody else who dabbles in extensions in your area, who doesn't offer as amazing of an experience, who charges less. Right?
Not going there.
Exactly. You won't even think twice about it, right?
Mm-mm. What about, you know, Taylor's the ultimate hype, but like, what are some strategies that you've implemented in your career to create that hype? If I'm sitting here saying, I don't know where to start, like, what's your advice there?
Yeah, really great question. The pre-visit experience and the post-visit experience.
Mm.
The in-the-chair experience is absolutely so important. And there's so many things we can talk about there, of course. But the pre-visit experience and the post-visit experience. I've been teaching pre-visit pathway. That's my signature course. That's where I really teach the majority of my theory and my teachings.
Okay.
I've been teaching pre-visit pathway for 3 years now. And it really focuses on how to create first an excellent next-level client experience in that pre-visit.
Okay.
And then it goes into how can you create systems that are really helpful for your work-life balance, for your pricing, to make sure that you have those boundaries in place and that you're held accountable to them, and you're showing up consistently and you have more of a work-life balance.
Okay.
And with the client experience side of things, like who the hell else in your area is even thinking about a pre-visit experience before your client comes into the door?
Right.
Right. So it's like, that's how you do it. Like that is how you do it. You offer an experience where it's like, oh my God, I've never had a hairstylist do this for me before. You offer an experience where it's like, oh my God, this feels like this experience was literally built and tailored just for me. And I haven't even walked into the door yet.
That's awesome.
That type of shit, that is what creates the hype, right?
Yeah.
That is what makes somebody want to text all their friends and family and tell them about this insane experience that they're about to get into, right?
Yeah.
So that's how you do it. The client experience as a whole, but truly like the missing gaps that the majority of the industry has a lot of opportunity to capitalize upon is the pre-visit experience and the post-visit experience.
Yeah, I love that because you're right. It's those little details, right? That you don't forget. And again, you're sharing with family and friends and there you go.
Yep.
I love exactly. it. All right. So as we round out our questions, is there any kind of parting advice that you want to share for a stylist that's out there saying, wait a second, I do doubt myself. I don't have any scale. Where in the heck do I even start?
Okay.
Yes.
So if you're looking to really figure out how to scale your business, and if you are looking to like move past any sort of, you know, if you're ready to put on your blinders, right, to what everybody else is doing, and if you're ready to get really serious about your business and actually implement business strategies that like massive CEOs and massive Fortune 500 companies are doing, then that's what I teach. I teach you what other industries have done, and I teach you things that are based upon what consumer behavior looks like right now and in the future. And I'll teach you how to get ahead. And I do that with the Modern Hairstylist podcast. And I do it within my programs as well. But the Modern Hairstylist podcast is a great place to start with me. If you want, listening to this, my friend, if you want to figure out which episodes on the Modern Hairstylist podcast would be best for you to tune into, you can go to hunterdonia.com/quiz and you'll take a short little quiz, and it'll tell you exactly like where you're at in your business right now and what you should be focusing on. And it'll be a curated playlist of episodes that will be specific to that one topic that will be make the most sense for you right now. So that's hunterdonia.com/quiz. Other than that, send me a DM. Let me know that you heard me on the Tees podcast. I would love to connect with you, and we can go from there.
I love it. So, so smart. This has been so fun. Thank you for shedding all of your wisdom with our listeners today.
Yeah, Kelly, thank you so much. I do a lot of podcast interviews, and this was absolutely excellent.
Thank you.
What beautiful facilitation. What great questions. I really appreciate it. And I love platforms like this that are really trying to move the industry forward in a beautiful direction. So again, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
One last
question.
I got a couple for you. All right. Okay. So we rounded out with a little something we call the Tees Quick Takes. And if you're up for it, I'm going to fire some questions at you.
Okay. I always get nervous when this happens, but let's do it.
All right. What was the most unique style or fashion trend that you personally have ever embraced?
On myself?
Yes.
Oh my God. I have been every hair color on this planet. I bleached my eyebrows once.
Okay.
But it was like not cute, girl.
No. Oh.
I told y'all about my middle school experience, and it was like 7th, 8th grade.
Okay.
I took like box bleach. Okay.
Oh.
And I put that on my eyebrows, and they were like orange. And I didn't really realize that they were orange, but I look back at the Christmas photos from that year, and I'm like, oh my, I had orange eyebrows and blue hair. It was wild.
Oh my. That was a time. What a time. Okay, what was the worst haircut you've ever had?
That I've had of myself?
Yeah, and when was it?
So same time. It was all that time. Oh, I did a lot around that time.
Yeah.
I just had like a fried mop on my head of like blonde 40 volume over and over and over again. Ooh. Like just like putting colors on it, then bleaching them out, colors on it, bleaching them out. Luckily I was like, you know, a young boy who had like this thick, luscious hair that I do not have anymore. But it was not cute. It was not the tea at the time. It was not good.
I wish,
mm-hmm. And I know this is an unpopular opinion, so especially for hairdressers. I feel like hairdressers sometimes hate this, but right now, I don't know if you notice this, Kelly, but right now, especially with boys, the mullets are in, dude. Like, I wish that I did a mullet before my hair got a little bit finer and I wasn't so committed to like doing my fade every 2 weeks.
It is. It's a moppy hair look out there right now. It's a lot.
Real. Yeah.
Okay. What is your phone screen time from the past week?
Oh, girl, you do not want to know.
Oh,
you do not.
I don't know. We've got some high, high numbers.
50 hours.
Oh, that's not bad.
Is it not bad?
I don't know.
Okay. To be fair, my job does like,
no.
Like my phone is a big part of my job. So
of course it is.
Hopefully that's not like terrible.
No, I think we've had higher. Don't worry.
What a good question.
Now you're going to be thinking about it.
No, for real. I need to, this is another place.
So a parameter, where, a boundary.
Exactly. I could set up a system around this. No. 100%.
Sorry about that. Anyway. Okay. What is your earliest memory of being a hairstylist?
Well, I mean, it was pre-beauty school, right? So like, my real answer, I guess, my official answer for like being a hairstylist is walking into that cosmetology room and like being so freaking excited about it.
Awesome.
But before that, even, so the first time I ever colored my hair, it was just like, I just became like a friend. I just became friends with like an acquaintance of my neighbor. Okay. And this girl, she started getting into like coloring hair. She actually works at Sally's Beauty Supply to this day.
Okay. Awesome.
She never actually became a hairdresser,
but
she was interested in it at the time.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to express myself like and explore my identity at the time. And I remember telling my dad, I was like, "Dad, I'm coloring my hair black with blonde stripes tomorrow."
Yep.
For the first time. And he was like, "No, you don't." And I was like, I'm going to." So I went up the street. It was at my neighbor's house. It was my neighbor and her friend.
Okay.
And we did the situation. We put the color on and they rinsed it out with the garden hose outside.
Oh.
Because we didn't want to like get the inside of their house like stained or anything like that. And it was not cute. I looked like a skunk.
Yeah. It was not pretty.
That is my first memory as a hairdresser.
Okay.
Like that was truly like the beginning of the spark for me.
That's a good one. I love it. Okay, last question. Imagine you could teleport anywhere. Where would you go right now?
The desert in Arizona.
Oh, all right.
It's like my favorite place ever. I am obsessed with Arizona. I'm out in Philly. I'm in Philadelphia.
Okay.
And I just love the desert so much. It's where I feel most at peace. I just think it's so beautiful, particularly in Arizona, because it's so biodiverse.
Yep.
And it's just like it's where I've had my most happiest memories.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. And we'll be sure to link in our show notes all the places where everyone can find you and check out your class. Love the quiz. That's so smart. So smart.
Thank you.
But again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kelly. I appreciate it.
All right, Jeff. I mean, he's no doubt got this dialed in from an efficiency perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I love his journey, first of all. And it was really heartwarming to hear that. But now how he's empowering other pros. And I love his insight on how to navigate if you do have ADHD and really utilize his education and his tips and tricks.
I learned so much.
Be sure to hit subscribe, rate and review, and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok at Read the Tees, and send in questions to volumeup@thetees.com.
Volume Up is a Tees Media production. This episode was produced by Monica Hickey and Madeline Hickey. Ryan Daly is our editor and audio engineer. Thank you to our creative team for the custom Volume Up theme song and for putting together the graphics for this episode.